Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. This is the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. And if you got questions, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. We got like a little delay between the two of us here.
Oh, we can't, you know, this socially distancing radio show, it's hard to, we can't see each other, so we're relying on our wonderful voices.
That's sad, and relying on Ben. It's sad we haven't been in the studio with Ben since March.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
It has. Mm-hmm. It has. So we're looking forward to getting back into the station and being able to actually have a conversation between the people. But we would love for you guys to give us a call at 518-476-5900. Again, that's 518-476-5900. And we can answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. Kim is our geriatric care manager, so she has a lot of insight as to what services are available if you wanted to give us a call. I wanted to mention that I've gotten some really interesting calls. I was away this week on vacation, but got some interesting calls from people that I had met with back in March, or I did a phone conference during basically the pandemic while we were socially distancing, and people are now ready to move forward and do their documents. I think that people were kind of wondering to see how this is going to work out, and now they've seen that things are not changing a lot, and they're like, well, I better get my documents done.
Yeah, yeah. I know, and you know, now that we're starting to see folks in the office on a limited basis, it's some of the folks that have been waiting for a while to update their things are, you know, starting to come in. It's nice to see some faces. It's a lot of work, obviously, to have folks in the office because we are definitely taking all of the safety measures that we need to take in order to accommodate that. But it is nice to see faces and have folks come in and be able to do that for them.
Yeah, it's great to see people in person. It's just so much nicer to see the face. Unfortunately, you can't. They have a mask on. We require people to wear masks, and we also will ask the typical COVID questions, you know, have you been around anyone that was diagnosed, and have you been in any of the, 31 states now? And so we're being very, very careful because we want to protect our employees and we want to protect our clients. So we are seeing clients in all of our offices. It's just that we have them call when they arrive so that we can make sure everything is sanitized for them to come up so there's no people waiting in our lobby in any of the offices or anything like that. We get people in and we get them out and then we wipe everything down. So if you want to come in and see us now that we're open, you can actually give Stacy a call on Monday, and she can put some time on any of our calendars. And we still are doing phone consults, too. I got an interesting call from a lady before I went away on vacation, and she was telling me that she needed to do a will for her stepfather, that she had downloaded the healthcare proxy, she downloaded the power of attorney, she had downloaded the will, and wanted to know if her aunt could be the witness. And I'm like, no. And so the thing is, you've got to be really careful about these things because come to find out, it was her stepfather she was doing the will for. He was disinheriting his children, right? Mm-hmm. He was going to leave everything to her, the stepdaughter, and she was the one that was going to be writing the will for him. I was like, yeah, that's not good. You definitely need to have an attorney do the will because if you're the one that's doing the will, that could totally be construed as undue influence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, you know, that's one of those things where you really need to consult an attorney. And we also had a person last week that brought in a power of attorney that they had downloaded from the internet, and it was actually a form that was before the changes in 2010. So it was a 2009 form, and they didn't fill it out correctly, number one. Number two, it didn't have the statutory gifts rider, so it wasn't even valid. So you've got to be careful. Just because a form's out there on the internet, or you go on a website and they say these are the newest, latest, and greatest forms, they aren't necessarily the correct forms. Do you see that a lot, Kim?
Yeah, I mean, we see all sorts of things, right? We see people who you know, I think another big no-no that we've seen more of as of late are people who scratch through something in their document, you know? And once you do that, once you write on it, it's not valid anymore, right?
Right, correct. A lot of people don't understand that either. If you have the original document, so if you have your original will, and you say, oh, well, Sally got married and changed her last name, and so you mark through that and you write her new last name on the will, you've just voided the entire document. Or if you say, oh, that person, my sister passed away, so she can't get anything anymore, and you mark through their name, you've voided the entire document. So you have to be really careful, because any markings on an original will voids the entire document. If you have a copy, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead. Okay.
No, I was going to say it's the same true for both power of attorney and healthcare proxy as well, if you mark through those documents.
I've seen people that have, like, marked through the old addresses on powers of attorney. I mean, I wouldn't suggest it. And the banks and stuff have still taken them. But we're getting a lot of pushback from banks and from financial institutions about the powers of attorney that were actually done before the policies changed in 2009, right, when the laws changed mm-hmm. in 2009. Before that, people had like a one-page power of attorney or a three-page power of attorney, and now with the statutory gifts rider, they're around 13 pages, and they were supposed to be grandfathered in, the ones that were done prior to that, but unfortunately, the banks are really pushing back against those. They're saying, nope, they need to do new ones. So now when people are coming in, we're like, your power of attorney is still perfectly fine, but you should really just do a new one so that moving forward, you won't have any issues with the financial institutions.
Right, right. And, I mean, the statutory gifts rider is really a pretty comprehensive. And I know a lot of times we have conversations with people because of the gifting factor, and they get the gifting confused between the IRS rules and then what we mostly talk about when we're talking about gifting for purposes of Medicaid, you know. So there's a lot of clarification that has to happen there as well, because they're two completely different things.
Right. If you want to give $15,000 to anybody, right, so you could give it to 10 different people, you could give them all $15,000, and you wouldn't have to file a gift tax return. That's the IRS rule. But if you gave that $15,000 to 10 people and then you're trying to qualify for Medicaid, they're going to say, but before you gave that money away, you could have used it to pay for your care, and therefore we're going to penalize you for that money, and you're not going to qualify. So then you got to figure out how to pay for your care. You've got to be really, really careful when you're doing your gifting. And especially with the changes in the Medicaid law, we were talking previously as soon as the budget came out and they said that they were going to change the rules for community Medicaid. We kept telling people we really need to do everything by October 1st. But there's been some information back and forth as to how they're going to treat transfers before October 1st.
Right, right. Still a little bit of an unknown territory, so we're still trying to really encourage folks to come in and get that planning done before October 1st, so that we're safe, you know, that we know at that point that that they'll be okay, even if they're not quite ready. At least you have your planning done, and we'll have a much easier time at trying to access the services for you.
Right.
Because it's not even changing from a... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, because it's not even changing from a financial standpoint. I mean, the services are changing from a care standpoint as well. You know, there's an additional activity of daily living added to being able to, you know, because there's the two parts, right, of qualifying. There's the financial piece, but then there's also the care piece. And, you know, prior to the new law changing or new regs, you know, you only needed assistance with two activities of daily living. And now you, you know, the language says more than two, which is three. So, you know, a lot of times people don't need assistance with three. They need maybe, help with a shower and maybe some help with, medication reminders or some kind of, you know, assistance with walking, but they're not going to qualify for needing assistance with three or more of the activities of daily living. I mean, that's half. Because there's technically six activities of daily living, you know, bathing, dressing, transferring, ambulating, incontinence care, and I just lost one. So, but, you know, we're going to have to, it's going to be even a little more challenging to prove that you need that physical hands-on assistance with those activities of daily living now.
It's true, and we want to make sure that our clients come in, meet with us, we go through all of the things that are available to them, right, and then draft the documents that they need to make sure that they can take advantage of many benefits as they can get. But we would love for you guys to give us a call. Kim and I could talk all day, but we would love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we're going to be here for the next, next 48 minutes. So we'd love for you guys to give us a call. And if you have questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, give us a call. Estate administration is kind of an interesting area of the law. I received an email from a son who said that all of a sudden he received paperwork from an attorney. His father had passed away. He received paperwork from an attorney, and he said, you know, there's no way he was able to redo his will. I could prove that he was incapacitated. I want copies of his old documents because I was the executor. So when we go and pull up the documents, I mean, they were done 10 years ago. We pull them up, and in fact, yes, he was the executor, but what people need to understand is we represent the parents, right? The people that draft the documents, and they were done 10 years ago, and about 5 years ago, the parents actually sent a letter to us through an attorney and asked us to send all the original documents to them. So we don't even have any original documents anymore. We don't really represent the parents anymore. And so here's the son thinking that he's still the executor and he's still in charge, and the parents have changed the documents.
Mm. Wow.
So we have to, you know, it's not like we call the kids and say, hey, your mom and dad are changing their documents. They're going to another attorney, because we represent the parents, not the kids. Just like whenever he called, if he, in fact, was the executor, we would have been able to give him information. But if he's not the executor, then we can't give him any information, right? It's very difficult to kind of walk that fine line whenever you have the parents that you represent, especially let's just say the child calls up and says, mom's having trouble, cognitive issues, right? And they're the power of attorney, right? So then you're going to be able to talk to them. Or if they call up and say, I want copies of mom's documents, and you're like, well, we have to have permission from mom. And then they said, well, mom is incapacitated. So what are you going to do then, right? So it's very, very difficult to kind of walk that fine line and make sure that you protect your client's privacy, but yet make sure that your client has the documents and the support that they need. That's why it's always nice whenever people come in to sign their documents that they introduce this to the kids, or they have the kids contact us so that we have kind of a point of reference as to what's going on. Because we want to try to do what we can to make sure everything goes as smoothly as possible, and we want to make sure that people plan.
Right. Planning is so super important. I mean, that's one of the things that we focused on when we did our very first, which was interesting, our client seminar that we had via, you know, a webinar format. That was pretty interesting, but, talking about the different changes and challenges and some of the things that folks can do to kind of prepare, you know, because we still want to keep people up to date and in the know, even though we can't do things the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, we missed all of our clients. Usually whenever we have our client seminar, we get to see everybody and talk to them and have some coffee and some cookies and some brownies. And this time it was done via Zoom. We had a great attendance on it, a lot of good questions. We did a presentation on the how to use your irrevocable trust. I thought that was kind of a good one that Dave did, because a lot of people came in years and years ago. They set up an irrevocable trust. They transferred their house to the trust, which is the largest asset most people have, right? So they transfer that to the trust, and then they just kind of like set it and forget it, right? And in the meantime, they have investments in stuff that are growing in value, and if they don't transfer those to the trust, then those are things that are going to be available to pay for care.
Right, right. Well, we actually get a lot of calls, too, about folks who kind of did some of the work and then never funded. I had actually three of those calls in the last 2 weeks where people had called and said, you know, I'm doing some work with my parents and realized that they set everything up in like 1991 and never funded it. So that was an interesting call to get and try to work with the son to help him kind of figure out what they needed to do, because obviously now mom and dad are a lot older than they were when they set everything up in 91, and they're trying to do some planning. So sometimes that's a surprise to people, because you actually have to follow through. It's not just doing the coming into the office and doing the legal documents. You actually have to, you know, follow through with funding it, with whatever you talked about.
Yeah, we have like a little booklet that I always tell people, that, you know, this is in your folder, and this is everything you ever wanted to know about your trust but were afraid to ask. And it's kind of a cool booklet because, okay, it's like, now that I've set up my trust, this is what I need to do, right? So it talks about, you know, if you check your life insurance policies, do they have beneficiaries? Do they have contingent beneficiaries? Check your retirement accounts. Do they have beneficiaries? Do they have contingent beneficiaries? What money did you discuss moving into the trust? If you need that, then we do what are called memorandums of trust. And if it's an irrevocable trust, the memorandum of trust will say, okay, this is the name of your trust. These are who your trustees are. This is who you are. We get the EIN number, which is basically the Social Security number for the trust. And with this memorandum of trust, people can go to the bank, and they don't have to take the whole trust in there unless the bank says, no, we need the whole trust, because it's really none of their business. And the memorandum of trust gives them all the information that they need. And then if you have a CD or whatever, they can retitle that CD into the name of the trust, and then that 5 years starts ticking away, so that if something happens to you after that asset's been in the trust for 5 years, then that asset won't have to go to pay for your care.
Debbie and Kim?
Yes.
We have a caller.
We have a caller.
Yes, we do. We have Barbara in Albany.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being our first caller.
Yes. I have a very quick question about power of attorney. My husband and I did our POAs years ago, making each other the power of attorney. He's no longer able to function as my power of attorney. We did name one of the kids as the alternate. Do I need to do any paperwork, or does that just automatically happen in case one of them would need to step in?
Well, the problem that you have is, let's just say one of your kids had to go to the bank to do something for you, they're going to ask where your husband is. So what I would say is, well, you're competent, you could always do a new one, or you could have him sign a resignation so that it says he resigns his power of attorney, and then you could use that with the power of attorney whenever the kids need to use it. It might just be as easy just to redo a new one.
Do another one. Sure. Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that's awesome. We got at least one call in.
Well, and that's a big question too, that people, you know, and that's something that we talk about quite often, because a lot of, you know, prior to working with Herzog, I worked at the Alzheimer's Association, and, you know, we're partners with them. And one of the things that we really stress too is it's so important to update your documents, because as we age, obviously, you know, things change. And so you want to make sure that whoever you have named can act on your behalf for you in the way that you would like.
Yes, and you know, people are like, I'll name each other, and then this child, and then this child. But the power of attorney, you can name or, right? So if you've got a spouse and you want to name your child or, right? So it could be husband or daughter. It could be husband, then daughter. It could be husband and daughter. So there's different ways you can set up the power of attorney, and a lot of people don't think about it. They're young. They come in. They do their power of attorney. They name each other, and then they name the kids kind of in a pecking order, and that's fine. But unfortunately, when it comes to the time that you actually need to use your power of attorney, you have to look at the fact that, like our caller just said, you know, that her husband can't act for her anymore. So...
Right.
Or either you're going to have to redo the power of attorney, or he's going to have to do a resignation.
Debbie, Kim,
yes.
We have another caller. It
Yay.
Is, and you got, and you know and love him. It's Frank from Colony.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Debbie. Listen, the two questions I'm going to ask may be more appropriate for a CPA, but I'll try anyway. Event of my unfortunate demise, who can sign my income tax return? Do you know?
Well,
in other words,
there's a form that is on the website for income tax return for a decedent, and it asks the questions. It says, was there an executor? Was there this? Was there that? And basically, that person fills out that affidavit.
Oh, okay. So it ain't a big deal.
No, it's not a huge deal.
Not for me. I'm covered.
That's right, because you'll be gone.
Well, I can't take my cell phone with me. But listen, I have another question. I've owned my house for, like, what, 60 years.
Yeah.
And, again, when I pass, the house is sold.
Uh-huh.
Do you know if there's a cost basis for something like that? I mean, 60 years ago, what I paid for the house is chicken feed, and if it's sold now, I just thought about that question before I fell asleep last night.
And you worried about it all night, right?
No, not all night, but I thought about it. I said, you know, I'm going to run it by Debbie and Harry and the group and see if they can enlighten me, because I'm leaving instructions. I think it's a wise thing to leave instructions for the grantees, so they're not confused as to certain things.
No, and that makes sense.
That's what I'm trying to do.
So you have an irrevocable trust, and what happens is when you do an irrevocable trust and you title your house to the trust, you reserve the right to live there as long as you want to. Unfortunately, you have to pay the expenses. So because you really didn't give up all of your rights to the house, whenever you pass away, there's a step-up in basis, right? So even if you paid $20,000 for it years and years ago, whatever it's worth, whenever you pass away, it's like a snapshot of the day that you pass away, whatever it's worth is what the basis is. So,
ooh.
So if the kids sell it for $250,000, even though you only paid $20,000 for it, plus I'm sure you've made improvements, Frank. But anyway.
Yes, I have.
There's not going to be any capital gains issues.
Oh, there won't be?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
So if you sold it right now, right, if you sold it right now, you would still get to use your capital gain exclusion, which is $250,000. So if you, say again, if you paid $20,000 for the house plus improvements, and then you sell it for $250,000, right? You've got a $250,000 capital gains exclusion, so you wouldn't have to pay capital gains on it either if you sold it.
Oh, okay, okay. I got one more. Do you know if the income? I don't have any stocks or anything. I just have money in the bank for the trust. Mm-hmm. Is that when that distribution is made? Is that? Do you know if that's taxable?
Well,
let's say each. I got five kids. Each get $40,000.
Mm-hmm. So no, it's not taxable. There, you know, unless you have over $5 million, Frank, there's not going to be any estate tax. I mean, it's more than $5 million. I just kind of rounded it off. But if you have over $5 million, then there would possibly be some estate tax, and I know that's not the situation.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not.
Generally, whenever someone inherits something, the only thing in New York that usually ends up having to be taxed is something that's tax-deferred. So if you left the kids your retirement account, right, if you left them an IRA or a 401k or something like that, that's money that no tax has ever been paid on. Mm-hmm. That would be an account that if they inherited, they'd have to pay tax on. But if they're just going to get money markets or CDs or stocks or bonds, stocks and bonds also get a step up, right, in basis whenever you pass away. So mm-hmm. generally, there's not going to be any tax due on anything except for something that's tax deferred.
Boy, you're good, Debbie. Wow.
Hey, I'm impressed.
I thought you might say, no, this is best answered by a CPA, but you nailed it. And you've relieved some anxiety in me.
Well, you know, you're welcome to come in and visit any time, Frank. Just make sure you wear your mask.
Okay. And I'm trying to think of another amendment. Darn it. I want to get into Guinness Book of Records.
I know.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and I wish you the best.
Take care, Frank. If you need anything else, holler, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. So great questions, huh?
They are really great questions, and it's funny because a lot of times you just don't think about that stuff, you know? You don't think about the you know, sometimes they say the devil's in the details, and there are a lot of details sometimes that we don't think about when we're doing these kinds of things.
And that's why we try to make sure that if we have a client that has tax questions or investment questions, that we work with their financial advisor, we work with their CPA, to make sure that all three of us are doing what's best for the client, because there's different planning that goes into the process, right? And we want to make sure that everybody's on board and that we're doing the best to protect our client, to protect their assets.
Right. And, you know, we're here and we answer all sorts of questions, even if they're not directly legally related, you know. And we try to work very hard to make the connections if we can't answer those. That's one of the biggest things that I love, too, is having somebody call and say, and we'll be like, well, I don't exactly have the answer to that, but I'm going to find out and get back to you. Speaking
yes,
of answering
great.
Questions, we've got some seminars coming up in the upcoming weeks, right?
Right. Well, we have one on Wednesday, right? We have two on Wednesday.
We have two on Wednesday, the 29th at 10. We're doing How to Plan Your Estate, which is a lot of just kind of the estate planning 101, right? It's a newer one that we're kind of doing.
And then at 2, we have EP Horror Stories, which is always kind of fun. We always do those on the radio whenever we do them right around Halloween. We do. We talk about things that go wrong. The EP Horror Stories is actually about estate planning for the rich and famous that went awry. You know, people right. that you would think that have a lot of money that would, first thing they would do would be doing their planning, is not necessarily number one on their agenda.
No, and actually how it applies to just our regular situations, you know, it's taking kind of the famous people and putting them in everyday scenarios so that we go, oh, I understand how that would happen.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna jump in here. We are at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for.
Options available for Medicaid planning and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we'd love for you to give us a call. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we can answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. And Kim Hance is our geriatric care manager, if you guys haven't met her yet. And so let me give you a scenario, Kim, and you tell me what you think. So I have a new couple that contacted me, and she had a brain bleed years ago, and now she has Alzheimer's. And her husband is her sole caregiver, and we're going to look at community Medicaid to try to get him some help in the house, because being her sole caregiver, which is what we see a lot of times, is you can't really go anywhere. You can't really do anything. And if your kids don't live local, it's like, who do you call on to take care of your loved one, even if you need to go to the grocery store? So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, as a, particularly because she's got a, you know, chronic condition like Alzheimer's, dementia, we know that it's progressive, so it's only going to progress more from where she's currently at, and so it's going to become more and more challenging. Always looking at the initial things that we can do to kind of help, and that would be accessing some of the community supports that would be available to them while we do the planning for Medicaid, because as we all know, Medicaid doesn't happen overnight. But, you know, if all of the things align as far as the house being safe and a place where she can age well, and we can actually access the care for her. And, you know, we also want to put a plan in place for him too, because generally speaking, when couples come to us, they're both aging. So we want to make sure we can take care of both of them in the event that even something happens to the caregiver. You know, we want to put a plan in place for, you know, what would happen to her. But I do love being able to keep people at home and putting together that plan and looking at the different programs that are available to help sustain that caregiver burden that happens so often. So yes, I'm definitely an advocate of the community Medicaid program, especially if we can make sure we put the care in place. And that's a lot of what I help with, is helping them understand what services are available and putting together the best plan for success.
Well, and that's difficult because you've got to weigh both sides, like you said. And a lot of people are like, well, we'll just take care of the spouse that needs help. We'll get them taken care of. We'll get them on services. But we've had situations where actually we want to try to keep both mom and dad at home, and they both need services. So what do we do about that?
Right. So we definitely have to look to see if it makes sense, because it does change the planning process a little bit. You know, the Medicaid rules are a lot more forgiving, if you will, if we're only looking at one person, right? Not so much, if we're looking at two. So we have to make sure that whatever planning we're doing is really going to work. And, you know, in a lot of circumstances, if we are able to get both folks qualified for Medicaid, we can get 24-hour care in the home. because we're dividing it between the two people. So it does make it a little bit easier from a care standpoint and being able to get larger chunks of time, assigning hours to both folks. So we really do have to look at it with that, wide angle lens to see what makes the most sense for each particular situation. And, we say this all the time that, everybody's circumstances are individual and everybody's fact pattern is different. So we really want to look at each individual circumstance and put together the best plan that we think will work. I was actually working with a family where the daughter and son-in-law lived in New Hampshire. Mom was in Waterford in her own apartment, and they had actually qualified for community Medicaid, but were really being challenged with finding the, right amount of care for mom. And so often what happens, particularly when we're dealing with folks with a cognitive issue, Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that, we've got professionals who are saying, well, they need 24-hour care. And it's not so much that they need care. They need supervision. And that's much, much more challenging avenue in which to get care because the programs really don't all allow for, they allow for the care piece, which is, again, the assistance with the activities of daily living and also the instrumental activities of daily living like shopping and medication management and meal preparation and those types of things. But to have a sustainable 24-hour plan, and mom wasn't really crazy about having somebody one-on-one with her 24 hours a day, which we can understand. So we actually went the route of looking at an assisted living program for her. And a lot of times people will hear us say that Medicaid pays for community care, it pays for, home care, it pays for nursing home, but it doesn't pay for assisted living. But there are a handful of assisted livings that do accept Medicaid in the area. And we actually moved, she moved into the assisted living, it was probably June 13th, I think. And she is doing phenomenally well. She's got her own bedroom. She's very social. She really loves living there. But she's also got her privacy, which she wouldn't have had if we had put home care in. And she was very challenged by having somebody that she didn't really know in her apartment, all of the time. And so this is working out. This has been a nice, change for her, and it's working out really, really well. So sometimes that's the other thing that we look at when we're looking at the bigger picture. Is really what works for the individual because every circumstance is a little different. And because the daughter and son-in-law lived so far away, the other concern was what would happen if one of the caregivers didn't show up, because we always have to make sure that we have a good backup plan too, because things happen. Particularly in this day and age when people are working in healthcare, they can get exposed to things very quickly. So we want to make sure that we have a good backup plan for somebody in the event that a caregiver doesn't show up at home. If we're relying on that person to show up to make sure the person gets their medication and they eat and that they're okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of planning. And kind of what you said, you kind of hit the nail on the head, is you have to be able to look at all of your options. And a lot of people in the past haven't looked at options. It's like, oh, mom can't take care of herself. We just need to put her in a nursing home. And that's not necessarily the best place for someone. A nursing home should be like the last kind of resort. We want to try to make sure that, will they qualify for assisted living, right? Will they qualify for community Medicaid? There's so many different venues out there. Venues, I guess venue isn't the right word. Anyway, there's so many options out there, and that's why we try to educate our clients to tell them what's out there, because people don't know.
Right. Well, and this family in particular, when I kind of opened that door to the daughter, you know, that idea, because as we were talking, I said, well, you know, your mom does live in a populated area. She lives in a senior-specific apartment complex, so there are some supports built in. I said, but you guys are 3.5 hours away, and, you know, the chances of somebody not showing up for that 8-hour shift can be pretty high. And you're also saying that your mom is really kind of balking at having somebody with her all day, every day, which I can understand because it is sort of an invasion of privacy, if you will. And so that's when I presented to them. I said, you know, there are a couple of, and because the daughter and son-in-law lived 3.5 hours away, the location didn't matter as much. Right. They weren't looking for a place to be right in their backyard. So we were, you know, there's a lovely place out in Cambridge, which is Washington County, and that has an assisted living program, which accepts Medicaid. And it's the community Medicaid, not the chronic Medicaid for nursing home. And, you know, we got her all set up and situated. And it was great once they kind of loosened up from the COVID regulations and were able to start taking people, but they didn't even realize that that was an option. They had no idea that the assisted living program would be an option to them. And like I said, mom is doing incredibly well since she has moved there. So it was so nice to be able to open the door to them to that choice for her.
Yeah, it's out there. The couple that I was talking about earlier, they started as an example. Actually, they were working with the Eddie, and the Eddie was going to give them so many hours, but that's only for a year, right?
Right, through the respite program.
Mm-hmm. So, which is great, because he was going to get a little bit of a break, but unfortunately, they give you a certain amount of hours for a year, so if you use them in the first month, that's it.
Well, right, and this is what I always say to people kind of when we start their plan. I mean, that's one of the things that we look at accessing because, again, the Medicaid, you know, process takes a while. You know, we're looking at several months in order to be able to both financially qualify and then actually medically qualify somebody. So, you know, we're going to look for those other resources that we can put in place to kind of bridge the gap. You know, and the things that I say to families, the two most important things that we look at when we're developing this plan is we want to make sure it's safe and we want to make sure it's sustainable. You know, and while the respite program is wonderful and amazing, it's not sustainable because, you know, generally speaking, the average is about 80 hours of respite time for the year. And people go, well, that's a lot. Well, when you think about a week, you know, a week 24/7 is 168 hours. So that's half of a week, you know, that respite time covers if you're thinking 24/7. And again, not everybody needs 24/7. And it's wonderful to start off with, you know, 3 or 4 hours once or twice a week. But that will go very, very quickly. So we want to then create the ability to then sustain them beyond that 80 hours of assistance.
Oh, definitely. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. And what people need to understand is, we always use Harry's mother-in-law as an example. And again, while Kim and I are talking back and forth, if you guys would like to call in, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. His mother-in-law originally only had, what, 2 or 3 hours a day, right? She had the community Medicaid. She had 2 or 3 hours
yep.
a day. And now she's up to, what, 70 hours a week now?
Yeah, so that's the other thing is that the program can grow with you. And know a lot of times people are like, well, I really don't need that much. Well, that's fine. And that's actually the time to step in, right? It's because
right.
it's much easier to start off incrementally. It's really hard to jump in needing 24-hour care. And, you know, generally speaking, the Medicaid programs don't cover 24-hour home care. I mean, you know, depending geographically where you are, it's not just so much about the hours. It's finding the bodies to actually provide the care as well. So sometimes we have to get creative in our ways of helping people, you know, figure those plans out. And that's a big part of, you know, that's why it's so nice to have the complement of the legal and then the social work care management piece, is because we can put together both sides of the plan, both the financial piece to get qualified for Medicaid and then, you know, the social piece in order to actually obtain the services. You know, a lot of families that I work with, they've done the Medicaid, but they just have not been able to get services started because they don't even know what's out there to even be able to make a choice, you know?
Right. So that's the thing too. People don't realize that they can just hire you to do that, that they don't necessarily have to have us do the Medicaid or the legal documents, that you're out there and you can help them navigate stuff like that.
Right. It's interesting. This week alone, we've got two folks that are actually going to be working with us because they had applied for community Medicaid. Both of them had been in rehab situations and were being discharged from rehab and had applied for Medicaid for home care. Both got denied because they were just a little bit over the resource of what they needed. But in talking to one of the daughters, you know, so she sent me the denial letter and I was like, well, you were about $5,000 over. So, you know, they've since spent that on, you know, paying privately for a caregiver to bring mom home. And, but they didn't understand about the ability to use a pooled trust because mom also, her income is too much. Right. But, you know, I explained to them, well, there's a pooled trust out there that will help you shelter your monthly income. So that's not so much the issue. But I also explained in order to use the pooled trust, you have to have a disability determination. So there's this whole other piece out there in getting all of the services and making sure it's a complete package. And she was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And I had, you know, I thought I was going to have to pay her spend down to the county. And then I was worried because she wasn't going to have enough money to pay her rent. And, you know, so in talking with her, you know, we're going to be working to help her reverse that decision on the community Medicaid, but also help her get set up for the community pooled trust and get into the right program that will actually provide the services that her mom needs. So it sometimes we don't start at the beginning with folks. We're actually helping them, you know, and she said, I just had no idea that, that this all existed and that we would have the ability to be able to, you know, have mom at home and, you know, be able to still utilize her income, even though it is through a pooled trust, but it's the ability to keep that income, you know, to help the benefit of mom staying in her apartment.
Right. So you don't know what you don't know.
We do. Right. And, it's certainly challenging for folks and, you know, particularly when they're in a caregiving role, it's sometimes more than they can manage. So that's why it's great to be able to have somebody that you can turn to help walk you through that process.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be able to do that. And it's a great thing that we offer.
So in addition to our webinars, we also have, you know, for folks that can't make our webinars live on our website, if you go to our blog section, so www.herzoglaw.com, we have a little tab at the top that's our blog section, and we have some of our previously recorded webinars that are up. In addition, our client seminar is up as well, and I thought it was actually kind of cool that our client seminar, we broke up into the three different sections that we did. So we did the, of course, we did community Medicaid updates, but we also, Debbie, you did a great presentation, I thought, on the CARES Act and SECURE Act. I actually learned quite a bit listening to that. And then, like you said, Dave really did kind of the deep dive as to how, you know, your Medicaid trust works. And so you can watch it each and those little pieces, or you can watch the whole thing if you have a little bit of time to kill.
A little bit of time to kill, about an hour. I think it went on for about an hour. But, you know, you can get your popcorn and your snacks and sit there and watch the webinars. But also, like Kim said, the client webinar is there. And all the different ones that we put on during the week are there, too. You know, wills versus trust, what to do when a loved one dies. And it's funny, I had a gentleman that emailed me about one of his in-laws had passed away, and what should he do? And he was from out of state. And I said, well, I said, we have this recorded, what to do when a loved one dies, on our website. So if you want to go there on our blog page and click on it, you can watch it, and it's going to walk you through step by step what you need to do. And he about a week later, he emailed me back. He's like, that was awesome. He goes, it took me a while to get through it. But he said it was awesome because it literally goes step by step, and it tells you exactly what you need to do and what you need to look for. So the webinars that are on our website are very good. And if you want to watch one live, we have webinars every Wednesday, and then we have webinar week, where we have a whole week of webinars that are on, I think, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, 10 and 2. We're doing them, just for the week we do them at 2 o'clock, every day at 2 o'clock.
And that's not for a couple weeks, right?
Right, the next one is our next week-long webinar are in August, and we'll be doing them weekly, obviously on the Wednesdays, but then we have our full week will be the week of August 10th. So August 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, we'll be doing them every day at 2 o'clock. And then the rest of the month of August, we'll be doing them every Wednesday at 10 and 2. And again, you can go to our website. They're all listed. Very easy just to click to register. Pretty seamless. And once you do a Zoom registration, it's easier to, you just click on and you're automatically approved and add it to your calendar, and it'll pop right up and remind you that you've registered.
Right, and after they attend the Zoom webinar, we send you out the slides, right? So if you want a copy of the slides from the webinar, we will email them out to you.
Yeah, so that's also a bonus.
Yeah, so that's the week of the 10th, where we have one every day at 2 o'clock, right? But on the 4th, the 18th, 25th, we have them at 10 and 2. So you can go on the website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can click on the ones that you want to attend. Or if you see one there that's really interesting and you can't attend it, then you can also go to our blog page on our website and see if it's one of the ones that's pre-recorded. Most of them are. We have added some new ones in that aren't recorded, but you can usually check there and see if you can watch one that's pre-recorded.
Yep. So it's pretty easy to access the information.
And we want to try to do that, especially during this time, because we can't do our in-person seminars, which I really kind of miss. I really miss the in-person seminars where we used to visit with people and be able to talk to them in person and talk about their specific issues that they have. And it's kind of hard, you know. I really enjoy seeing people face-to-face.
Yeah, although I do like the Zooms because, you know, we can interact with, for those of that show up on the camera that don't stop the video, and we can still interact a little bit. So it is nice to actually see familiar faces and, but we all say this, you know, when we're in a seminar, we'll ask this question and we'll ask people to raise their hands. And, you know, a lot of times we'll ask people on the Zoom webinars, well, if you can hear me, raise your hand, you know, so it's nice to be able to, it allows for some interaction, obviously not the interaction that we would do, in person, but, you know, if it at least allows us the opportunity to still get the information out, which is so important.
And there is a chat bar on the bottom. We did have quite a few people during the client webinar that asked questions. Like they would click on the chat and they could type a message either specifically to the person presenting, or they can, it can go out to everyone. Or it's interesting, you can pick a specific person on the webinar. Whenever we did the very first one, Dave did the very first webinar when this all started, the one and only Sholem Koplovitz, you know, was on it, and he saw that I was on it, and he was personally, he and I were actually having a conversation back and forth through the chat while Dave was presenting. So it was kind of interesting, and Sholem was very impressed with Dave. He thought Dave did a really good job, so that's a lot coming from Sholem.
Yeah, this virtual world has been, it's different, you know, kind of adjusting to all of this. But I think we're trying to make sure that we're still staying in touch with our clients and getting them the information they need. And obviously, we're always still a phone call away as well if folks need anything. And, you know, encourage you to call, come in, do what you need to do.
Well, also, we can still do the executions, the document executions via Zoom. Right, so if people can't get out of their house, we can have them sign their documents via Zoom. And I know Dave is still doing some of the document executions in the parking lot. If people are uncomfortable coming into the office, we can still do them in the parking lot. So,
yep,
lots
and then you know we got a way. Yep, we'll figure it out. You know, we've done front porch signings as well, you know, and where people haven't really been able to get out of their house. And so we will mask up and do a front porch signing as well. I know Harry and Terry went and did a front porch signing not too long ago for our clients that were housebound.
Yes, he did. So whatever you guys need, we'll try to make it work for you. And if you want to get an appointment, give us a call at the office at 518-465-7581. And Stacy is our scheduling coordinator. She'd love to talk to you. She's at extension 126. And again, the office phone number is 518-465-7581. And Stacy's at extension 126. You can also contact us on our website at info.herzoglaw.com. And it sounds like that's the ending music. So you guys have a great weekend. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.